100% job placement. It's amazing for many several years because one of the benefits is to have that foundation located in our building is that they help bring the companies in the department. People think that this paper industry, oh, they are just cutting all these trees to make all this paper. Nowadays, we have everything online. We don't need all this industry. This industry is going down. But it's not really. We should think they are really sustainable companies. I wanted to create a better bridge between South America and ESF. I wanted to have our students here in ESF going down to Brazil, learn about the industry in Brazil, visit all the industry, see the opportunities there out there. And I want to bring some of the students from that to come here too.
Welcome to Season 5 of Campus Conversations, the podcast. I am Joni Mahoney, and I have the honor of serving as SUNY ESF president. ESF is a small college with big ideas, and this season I'm speaking with faculty, students, and staff who make ESF mighty. These are the people working to improve our world and sustain the environment. I'm excited to welcome ESF's Dr. Erica Redmond as our guest today. In this episode, Erica will share the story of her journey from Brazil to the United States, from what inspired her passion for education to her pursuit of new experiences. Erica reflects on the tight-knit and diverse community she found as a PhD student at ESF as reasons she eventually made her way back here to teach in the paper engineering program. Thank you for joining me today, Erica.
Thank you so much for having me, Joni. This is so exciting.
I know I've been really interested in talking to you because you have an interesting story. I, as listeners know, grew up here in Syracuse. You can practically see the house I grew up in. My mom still lives there. And for you, it's been a very different kind of life. You're a long ways from home, right?
Yes. But now Syracuse is my home.
Oh, I love to hear you say that. So why don't we start at the beginning? Where was your childhood? Where did you start?
I was born in Viçosa, in Minas Gerais state in Brazil. I was born in this small town, but with so many students because everything's surrounded by students because it's all about the university. So we have one of the biggest universities in Brazil, which it comes people from all over the country. So it's a fun town, a small town. And my parents, they used to work at a school as a staff. My mom is a secretary in one of the departments. My dad used to be a staff in which he worked in research projects with the other professors.
So you grew up then with parents in the higher education world, and I would imagine a premium on education for yourself.
Yes. So for us, for me growing up, my goal already, I wanted to do a master's. I want to have my undergrad. I want to do a master's. I want to do a PhD abroad.
Oh, my goodness. So you were pretty focused, right? Pretty driven.
Yes, because growing up, we were surrounded by all the professors that my mom and my dad would work with. Some of them came abroad. They did their PhD. They saw the funding opportunities so they can come and study abroad. And something that I wanted to do. And I always wanted to learn English too.
Your English is remarkable. It's not a first language?
No, it's not my first language. Please make sure you tell that to my husband.
Okay.
It looks like I reach some level that I can't get over all the prepositions in and on and that. So I have some problems.
I do understand English is a tough second or third language for people. Mm-hmm. What was spoken in your home?
It's Portuguese.
That would be my guess. Mm-hmm. And then was English number two?
Yeah, but not necessarily everybody can learn English because you would have to go to a private school to learn English. But at some point, sometime in high school, I got some scholarship so I could study in this private, you know, English school. So that's where I learned.
Did your parents speak any English at all?
No, not at all. Nobody speaks English in my family, just myself.
That makes it even more remarkable, I will tell your husband.
Please do.
So you grew up then knowing that you knew that you wanted a bachelor's and a master's and a PhD. How did you pick the subject matter?
By an accident. In Brazil, for you to enter to a college, the very good college, they are public. They are for free. However, to get into college, you need to pass this exam. This is called vestibular. This is very hard. And you end up like here, applying to several schools to try the test. But when it was time for me to choose what I wanted to be, I was confused. I didn't know. As like a 16, 17 years old, I had no idea.
Right. And as the mother of four sons, I know that that is the common phrase for young people. They get through with high school and then the world starts asking them what they want to do with the rest of their lives. So you were like everybody and said, I don't know.
I don't know. First, I thought I wanted to be a dentist. So my first year I applied for a dentist school. They realized, I don't want to do that. No, yeah. Thank you. And then I saw there was a vestibular in this forest engineering. So I look at it and the description said, oh, that sounds interesting. I'm going to try this one out. So I just passed as like in second place. So I was kind of, I passed in this one, then I passed in this vestibular in my hometown. Might as well start college in this other town. And in this major that I'm not very familiar with. I've never heard about it.
Isn't that interesting? So you read about being a forest engineer, and then that just launched you into an undergraduate program. Did you find that it was a good fit?
Yes. Yeah, so there were so many areas like here. You take the first 2 years. We're trying to, you know, you get like lay the foundations of all this engineering and all this math and chemistry and biology. And I thought I could fit for everything. I was a good fit for everything, but still, I wasn't sure what I wanted. So I started doing a bunch of internships.
Which I know you think is important for students to have these experiences. So, you know, I always say it's as important to learn what you don't want to do. And the stakes are so low when you're still in school and you're getting these experiences and you can say, that's not really a great fit for me. But you actually found some that were a great fit. What were your internships?
So I did a bunch of internships first, like in a zoology department, like kind of sorting some of different animals for collection stuff. That wasn't for me. And then I started doing like a vegetable anatomy to learning to, you know, some of the cells of some leaves and some stuff along these lines. And I thought, oh, it's okay. And then I found this area like about wood chemistry. I said, oh, that's interesting. Trying to understand the anatomy of the wood, I thought it was interesting. So in that point, I have decided to return back to my hometown. To restart college there, transfer my credits back to my hometown.
The college where your parents were working?
Yes. And then once I got back, I was in search for new internships. And at that point, I had really good GPA, and I was looking for a professor who had some scholarship opportunity that would give me some financial benefits, and I could learn something as well.
Were you still working on your bachelor's, or had you transitioned?
Yes.
Okay,
so I was still doing my bachelor's in forest engineering. And then I found this professor that he always seek for good students because he had scholarship opportunities for the students doing internship in his lab. It was a pulp bleaching lab.
Pulp bleaching lab.
Bleaching lab. Yes. This is in the pulp and paper laboratory. There was like a really building that was a little far from the department. It was a little ways. When I got to that, I was kind of obsessed. It was so interesting because I saw, oh, how come? What is pulp bleaching? And it's basically when you take the wood and when you're going to make your paper, you need to make some lot of chemical reaction and washing in order to become like white. So you can see. So I was in the laboratory. And then that's when I start getting exposed to all these different paper industries. And that's when I start getting exposure to all this other, this area that was very fascinating to me.
It's really interesting for me to hear that you go from a 16, 17-year-old who's choosing a college and having no idea what you want to do. You read a description about forest engineer. It sounds interesting. You try a couple internships, you know, not perfect. You transfer back to the college in your hometown and make your way to this lab, which I think it's important to point out, you got there because you were looking for funding.
Yes.
And that is something we need to understand as a college administration, that there are barriers for students and you have to knock those barriers down so that they can experience these same kinds of opportunities that you did. You know, if there's not funding for a student and they have to disregard that, they might not find their passion, right?
Yes.
So I think that's really important. Then did you complete your bachelor's degree then in your hometown college?
I did. I finished. But at that point, right before completing, I took a co-op in this pub company.
Is that a break from the academics to
yes,
do?
Yes, a co-op is okay. When you do like a semester plus a few more months away, just doing some work for credit in industry. So I took a step back and I did this internship. And then it was a startup of a new fiber line in this pulp mill.
I would imagine that this industry is big in Brazil, given that you're in the Amazon.
No, it's huge. Pulp and paper industry in Brazil is very big. And they keep growing. They keep building new mills. They keep expanding. It's amazing how big. And they have like all this new industry with new equipment, brand state-of-the-art equipment.
And we need smart, educated people to explain how to do that in a way that protects the forest, which is, I've heard described, the lungs for the whole planet. So how do you carve this industry out of this natural resource in a way that is sustainable?
It's a good point that you bring it up, because overall, people think that this paper industry, oh, they are just cutting all these trees to make all this paper. Nowadays, we have everything online. We don't need all this industry. This industry is going down. But it's not really. We should think they are really sustainable companies because, for example, whatever area they're going to cut, they usually plant much more trees that they actually is going to cut. And then there is different ways to create the environment surrounding them. For example, again, I give you some examples as far as protecting some of the animals that they have in certain areas. In Brazil, after the colonization, they destroy a lot of the Atlantic forest. So some of these companies, they help reforest some of these areas and create what they call ecological corridors, connecting all these different forest areas. So they're going to harvest in these areas, but they have a little corridor so the animals, they can go.
I have read about that, and it's very interesting how well it works, how smart the animals are, and the people that are designing these pathways.
Yeah.
So you bring up a really important point, and I think that as far as what we offer here at ESF, the biggest misconception out in the public would be around the paper engineering world, because when people hear paper, they think copiers and they think newspapers. And as you pointed out, we've moved to a digital world. People aren't printing at work the way they used to. Newspapers have gone online. So people, I think, have this misconception about what the paper industry is all about. But it's so much more.
It's so much more. For example, Johnny, how many Amazon box of things that you bought online?
I know.
In our house.
And that's the one sentence that I say to young people is Amazon boxes, right? And they light up like, okay, I understand. There still is. But there's the fibers in a lot of different products.
In a lot of different products. So we're not talking about only here again in the allergy seasons and the cold seasons, all your tissues and, you know, your toilet papers, and which is very important. Everybody uses something daily. But what about some filters that even have in your own car? Nowadays, there are some research to use fibers in very sustainable manner. What else we can do with all these fibers that comes from the trees? So insulation materials, that's one of the things that they can look.
Right. And I would imagine there's an endless
endless
opportunity for research about uses for these organic materials.
Yes, in our department, you have already talked to a couple of our professors in our department. If you think about, for example, Dr. Deepak Kumar, he's doing really amazing research as far as take all these fibers, all these residues, not only for the agricultural residues, but also for the industry. How can you create this? How can you use this to create some bioplastic?
And I have seen some of the materials that he's created in his lab. And it's such a sustainable story because he's using what is the end product in other industries. And instead of it being waste, it's being turned into this beneficial use that compounds its sustainable benefit because it's usurping the need for petroleum products. It's really a remarkable story, what happens in our chemical engineering department, paper engineering. And I do think that we have to tell that story. And you being here with me today is really helpful. I want to make sure young people hear this because the opportunities for careers in the world of chemical engineering, paper engineering, are limitless.
Limitless. If you're not talking about only paper, right? This paper industry, any other chemical company, for example, the bioprocess company, everybody's looking for sustainable ways to produce something that the people need and to use, produce something with less material, less resource. How can recycle? So there are all these things that, for example, our engineers, they've been studying, getting their education for the department. They're going back to the world to help improve our world in this sense, trying to create sustainable ways to create new products, develop new processes that are more sustainable. And that is something that the population needs for the new generations.
Absolutely. Right? And you know what you speak of because you have had a good chunk of your career spent in private industry. Am I right?
Yes.
So tell us about that. So you ended up in Watertown, New York?
Yes. Very interesting story because when I finished my PhD here in the U.S., I went back to Brazil, but I have left a boyfriend here. So then when I returned to Brazil, I was working for this one of the largest paper package industry in South America. I was having a really good career, but my heart wasn't fulfilled because part of it was here in Syracuse. So I decided to quit my job. My career came back here and to start over, start fresh. I knew I had a PhD from Syracuse, from ESF, and I knew that I could get a career. But in that meantime, I didn't know what I'm going to do when I came back, what I'm going to do. So interesting enough, I came to one of my friends. He was defending his PhD. So he was having his presentation, his seminar up here. So I rushed to come here and to see his presentation. So then I met another friend who I was already working at this company in Watertown. And I was like, oh, how is life? Everything's good. I say, oh, by the way, do you have any job opportunity right there? And she says, oh, actually, we might. We might send you an email. You can talk to my boss. So I say, oh, sure. And I ended up going there for an interview. And they actually had fulfilled the position. And apparently, he liked me good enough to create a position for me in his product development team.
Interesting. So it was a research and development arm of the company.
Yeah.
So I know from reading a little bit about you that that advice for young people about making connections is real because it was serendipitous, but you had made all these connections. And when you reach out to people or have conversations with them, you learn of opportunities. And that led, I think, to about a decade up there in Watertown.
Yes. And this happened the same thing when we went back to Brazil. I also had connections who brought me to that company, the paper company that I worked. There was all about these connections.
I think it's so important for young people to know that about networking. It's as important to be well-educated and prepared to seize that opportunity. But it's weaving your way through people in the industry that meeting this person in Watertown who had filled the job, but met you, saw the potential for what you could add to the team and created this role for you. So then you spent 10 years up there in Watertown. Were you commuting
from
here?
I was commuting.
Oh,
I was
goodness.
Commuting the very first time. I had to drive. My car was really good. Thank Lord, because I did not have a problem. So I have to come and go through four snow belts on the way to work every winter for the
for 10 years.
For almost 10 years. It was a lot.
Oh, my goodness. So that's a quick lesson in driving in the snow. Mm-hmm. But then does that bring us about to the time of COVID?
Yes. So about the time of COVID, I was doing really well. I was R&D manager. We were helping launch a lot of products in the market. I really loved my job and my coworkers. So then during COVID, I was 7 months pregnant. And we locked down. I was home, was work remotely. It was fine. And then my daughter was born. And then I was maternity leave. And now with the time to, should I go back? Should I not go back? What I'm going to do? I'm not going to do. So I made a really hard decision at that point for me. I mean, I decided to quit my job and stay home with my daughter. It was still COVID and it was a lot of uncertainties. And I thought it would be safer to be home and care for my daughter, my baby at that point.
And everybody's circumstances are different. And that's a point I've made on this podcast in conversations like mm-hmm. this in the past. And that's why we all need to be supportive of each other and decisions that people make, because your family situation, your economic situation, like the moment in time that you're in. I mean, here's this pandemic and you have a new baby. And do you want to send that child into a group setting? So for whatever reason, you make the decision you make. I made the decisions I make. Mm-hmm. You know, others faced with their own personal circumstances make their decisions. And we just need to be kind and supportive
yes.
of each other. So you made the decision then during COVID to stay home with your new baby.
Yes, I stay home with a new baby, but I still try to keep my connection with my work. And then after when the baby was a little big enough, was having really good naps, I would work as a consultant for them in certain projects. So while she's napping, I was doing some conference calls. I was working some consulting with them, which was good for me to keep myself involved and in the workforce somehow, earning a little bit of money. My own money, which was always important for me as well.
In addition to staying home, you were able to do some consulting work and keep your skills fresh and your contacts up. And at some point, we lucked out and you ended up here at ESF. When was that?
When was that? It was a little bit after my daughter was less than 2 years old. And so I ended up getting pregnant again. By surprise. But I saw the opportunity here. I saw there was a position open as a faculty member. Because in the back end of my mind, when I came back to Syracuse, knowing that Syracuse has always been my home at that point, I always foresee myself going back as a faculty member here at the department.
So that was a long-term goal.
It was a long-term goal. So then when they opened this position, so many people contacted, oh, look it up, this position. I applied for it, and then I had to go through the entire process. And actually, on the day of my interview, I was 9 months pregnant. For my, you know, the whole day that we spent from the breakfast, go through the entire process until the night.
They are such long days anyhow. But to do that when you're 9 months pregnant must have been a stressor.
It was stressful even to choose an outfit. What am I going to wear that is still professional, but I'm still have a bump.
Right. Well, I'm so happy that you were willing to do that at that point. And then I understand your second child came along very quickly after the interview.
It was so funny, hilarious, because in the next day, my water broke.
Can you imagine, Erica, if that had happened here during your long day of interviews?
Oh my God. I remember in my back end of my mind, I was hoping my daughter, she was like, you know, stay there. I need to go through this process. At least let me go through this process. She let me do it. But then my water broke the very next day. It was hilarious. She came 3 weeks earlier.
Oh my, I hope we didn't bring her here early by putting you through a full day of interviews.
It might be a little bit, but I don't blame you because I have her 3 weeks longer than I was going to.
Okay, good.
So that's a good thing.
That's a good perspective. And how wonderful that you made this decision, difficult decision, to leave your career because at that moment in time, that's what your family needed. Mm-hmm. And then this opportunity opened at ESF, which had been a long-term goal of yours. It's so interesting mm-hmm. to me how frequently we hear stories like that mm-hmm. about the doors that open mm-hmm. and they open at the right time. And again, you had to put yourself in a position to be prepared. So when that opportunity came, you were the best qualified. Yeah. What an interesting coincidence of timing.
It was.
That you left, COVID happened, you stayed home. Mm-hmm. I'm also somebody who stepped out of my career mm-hmm. for a few years to stay home with little ones and then very luckily came back to an opportunity that I wanted and, you know, everything's been good. I know it doesn't always work out mm-hmm. like that for people. Mm-hmm. So let's back up again, though, because you said a couple things that are interesting. I don't want to breeze over the fact that you came here as a PhD student on a Fulbright scholarship. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes.
So where did you do your master's?
After I finished my undergrad, I was my top in my class.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
No surprise there.
No, and then I got like a scholarship to do my full master's there in the same university back home. So for that point, under my undergrad, I was working, learning about pulp bleaching. And in my master, I learned about paper. So with another professor who actually got his PhD from here, from ESF.
That part of your story I find mm-hmm. fascinating. So you're in Brazil and you're working with faculty that
got their PhD from here. It was two of my faculty members. The pulp bleaching, he got his PhD from here. His thesis is there in our conference room, as well my advisor from my master's, who also got his PhD from here. That's how one of the reasons how I found out about ESF.
It's so impactful. Our alumni are incredible. They're everywhere. And the fact that they told you about ESF, and then here you are, this top of your class student, mm-hmm. I'm somebody we would be thrilled to have in our graduate program here, learned about us and then made your way here. Who was your major professor here at ESF?
Dr. Raymond Francis.
Okay. And what year about were you here?
It was 2007.
Okay. And then as a condition of the Fulbright scholarship, you were required to go back to Brazil for a period of time?
Yeah, for 2 years.
So you came here, worked on your PhD, met your future husband, mm-hmm. felt like Syracuse was home, but had to fulfill this obligation mm-hmm. to go back to Brazil. Mm-hmm. And you were working there during the 2 year yeah. obligation?
Yeah. So I work in this biggest, one of the largest paper package company in Brazil. It was a really good position that I have, a really great opportunity. But as I mentioned before, I wasn't truly happy. He did came down to try to leave there, get his own career there. But one of the problems for paper companies is that the location, they are not located in the biggest towns. It's just always like a little country towns and a small towns with less resource. So it's very difficult for certain people to find jobs and careers. So he tried, didn't work out. So that's, he came back to the U.S. And 2 years after, I followed my path and came back here.
So your husband did make an attempt.
He did.
So that's the case then, I guess, if I think about it, the paper mills that I know of, they're in more remote areas. They're not really in downtown bustling population centers, right?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons that some of the paper companies have some difficulties in attracting young talents because of the location.
Right. And then if they're in a relationship with somebody who also needs a career, there has to be an opportunity for them around too. That's good feedback for paper companies to hear.
Yeah. So one of the things I know they've been trying to do some jobs, you can do some a little bit of remote work. So they usually try to highlight all the other things they have around surrounding towns. I know there are a lot of nice companies in New York State. They're close to Adirondacks. They're close. So they try
right.
to highlight some of the things, which it helps some people who like outdoors activities. You know, here we go. That's a better place for you. And of course, other benefits that can attract the young professionals.
So now you are back here and you have your two daughters and your family and you're on the faculty mm-hmm. at ESF. Congratulations.
Thank you.
What are some of your goals in this new phase of your career?
Oh my God, I have so many goals. As far as, first of all, one of the biggest one for me, it's help our department to attract a lot of students. Because as you may, it's hard, the paper industry, because nobody, you know, as 17 years old, you're going to think, oh, I'm going to be a paper engineer, or I want to work to this paper company. I want to do this bioprocess company.
Because you have no idea what that means.
You don't. So
right.
My goal is kind of to help expand and let people know about us.
I absolutely love that. And as we said earlier, there is a particular misconception around the paper engineering and chemical engineering. You know, if you hear environmental resources engineering or conservation biology, you know what that is and you know what that looks like in the future. But when you hear paper engineering and you're thinking copy paper in newspapers, it is discouraging. And we need people to get out in front of young people to say Amazon boxes, but also all of the beneficial uses of the materials, the organic materials, and some of the incredible work that's being done here at ESF that is life-changing. What kinds of things do you think you can do to help with recruiting?
First of all, even try to get people that come here on campus, they are here in Gateway, just to go up the top of the hill. It's already hard. People know we do have amazing students that help us in with, you know, the club officials, the Suskimi Club, AK Club. They, you know, they come to Gateway, they talk about the program, try to attract people to come up the hill. So the first thing, come up the hill. Learn about us. I will give you a presentation. I'll talk about, I'm going to clarify about, you know, our majors, all the opportunities we have, tons of scholarship opportunities, you know, thanks to our Syracuse Paper Foundation.
It's amazing the opportunities for students. The scholarships from the Syracuse Pulp and Paper Foundation are so significant. And the job placement, the numbers for that program and our outcome surveys are higher than any other.
100% job placement. It's amazing for many, several years, because one of the benefits is to have that foundation located in our building is that they help bring the companies in the department. They come to the department. They introduce themselves to the students. They tell them what the job opportunity I have here. I have these internships, I have this co-op, I have this full-time opportunity. And they do interview in the building.
I know. It's such a wonderful opportunity. And as parents, this story is among our best. You can come to ESF, which is an affordable school to start with. Mm-hmm. And it's a place that has incredible faculty, students, staff. Mm-hmm. You can come here. And then if you're in this particular program, you get bigger scholarships every year that you're in the program. You have all of these companies coming to you, interviewing you here on the campus. We can virtually guarantee that you will have a job when you leave, and it'll be with a salary higher than most, and you'll be doing real environmental work that improves the world. With this sustainability focus, mm-hmm. and you said Deepak and the work that he's doing, getting us off of fossil fuels, mm-hmm. but still having the benefit of these materials mm-hmm. that we can harvest sustainably, it's a wonderful story. Mm-hmm. And it's a real challenge, I think, for our communications and marketing mm-hmm. team, because how do you get in front of young students? Do you know whether we have ESF in the high school classes that are teaching in the paper engineering?
Yes, actually, we are having some coming in a couple of weeks. They are coming here. I'm actually helping coordinate their visit here on campus.
Oh, that's terrific. And there is a paper mill in Solvay.
There is a paper mill in Solvay. So there is some components that we need to work on, some of the paper program and disciplines that we need to help them to demonstrate why they are here. But we have all this. We have like amazing staff helping us in outreach. We have several events throughout the year in which is high school in ESF, you know, coming to ESF, or we have family weekends. We have the fair. We go to the fair every year. So we do have like handmade papers. So our staff, our students, they help us all these different things, come to attract this, all these different people, come to our department and do some, you know, handmade paper.
So I heard that you went to your daughter's classroom and taught them how to make paper.
Yes. I mean, I thought it was fun because she was transitioning to a different pre-K. And then I thought, well, what fun would that be? We do this at the fair where the kids love to do the handmade. I
want
to like
hand
this on my activity with them. So I brought what we do activity here into her school. And I have all these pre-K, the school kids still doing handmade paper. And I talk about, well, recycling and making the paper. So how we can go back and really redo this again and try to. Of course, it's hard. Like, they're pretty kinky. They're 3 years old.
Oh, my goodness. But they say we have to get them young. You were a one-woman recruiter. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So I have all this vision. Unfortunately, I cannot do it all. So that's where we're lucky we have staff, some of the faculty and students that help coordinate all this outreachy and recruiting events. That other thing, even like some of the visuals in our department. So we have a paper mill. In our basement.
I know. And I don't think a lot of people know that. I think we're one of the only schools with a working paper mill on our campus.
Yes, we do have some other schools that have small paper machine, but the way that we have. So, for example, in the paper program, in the senior year, they have like a capstone project in which they have to do a product development. So they have a client and the client said, oh, I need this paper with this specification. They need to go to the lab, do some tries in the lab. So we have a small paper machine run. They do this run, they scale up. And then we have a really big paper machine they actually get to try. So you can get more hands-on experience with any other program. This is a product development. Mm-hmm. They're really stuff that happened in real world.
I think it was Ray Appleby, maybe, and Gary Scott that invited me to come watch a run. Mm-hmm. And students were explaining to me about the composition of the paper and the testing that they had done. And now this was the culmination of that project, this paper run. It's fascinating. We should be in ESF High School teaching an ESF in the high school class for credit in paper engineering. And we should be doing that in Glens Falls, where there's a paper mill. I understand that it gets complicated when you cross state lines to give college credit for high school classes, but there's plenty of opportunity right here in New York State.
I think so. I see that there are a lot of room for improvement for us, there are room for growth, and I can't wait to help our department in this. I think we're doing step by steps, but we start seeing, you know, some of the numbers growing. But I can't wait to talk about the program because I see the benefits for it. I've been there. So even it's very interesting. I'm teaching introduction to chemical engineering class. So one of the things that I tried to do at career service came to do a presentation. So to reinforce to this freshman how important it is to build the resume, teaching them how to do a cover letter, create a LinkedIn profile.
Oh, it's so important. And it's so generous of you to take that time and to offer that to your students in the class. And then are you telling the students that are in an introduction to chemical engineering about the paper industry as well?
Yes, because in this introduction chemical engineer, we have all the majors in the class.
So bioprocess.
Bioprocess, the chemical, the paper, and the RMS. The renewable material science. They're all in this class. So we show all the opportunities of the majors because one advantage of coming to the chemical engineering department is that in the very first year, we have a common core for the engineering programs. So it's important for them to learn about all the majors, the opportunity for all the majors, what the difference between, because after the first year, they can switch majors without losing anything.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. And I know that's been a priority for people is being able to make that change, especially, again, because there is so much misconception. So when students come into your chemical engineering introduction class and learn about it, I would imagine a lot of them will be interested to pursue a paper engineering degree. So I'm very happy that you're here with us, but very grateful that you're willing to do all of this extra work to help us recruit and build the program.
Oh, my. It's my pleasure because I do think I see a lot of potential. And I see the potential, the willingness for everybody. Everybody wants the same goal. But I think here I'm a little bit the connector. I try to build all this team to help us to create this.
And you know, Erica, watching what you did in your own life by making all of these connections and getting to these wonderful opportunities that you've had, I just love that you're willing to put that same model in place on behalf of our students.
I wanted to give the students some of the opportunities that I have, and I saw that was beneficial. All these internships that I said, I think since my freshman year, it was important for me. And all these opportunities abroad, it was very important for me to pursue. And the same way, one of my goals mm-hmm. too, I wanted to create a better bridge between South America and ESF, because I wanted to show them. I wanted to have our students here in ESF going down to Brazil, learn about the industry in Brazil, visit all the industry, see the opportunities there out there. And I want to bring some of the students from there to come here too. We have other exchange programs in our department, for example, in Germany, you know, we have
BUCT.
But I want to do something similar with Brazil.
I want to be your partner.
Mm-hmm. So let's do it.
Let's talk about this after, because I think that potential is incredible. Mm-hmm. And when our students get there and find out there's ESF alum, mm-hmm. they'll be very pleasantly surprised.
They will.
So, I look forward to working with you on that and then talking to you further about your experience here. But thank you for being here, and thank you for all you're doing. And thanks for taking time to talk with me today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really have a really good time. Thank you so much. And thank you for the opportunity. I feel very blessed and humble for this opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you.